You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 119. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who would like to think he puts the damn in Poe Dameron, but actually puts the oh in Poe. It's Mark Mulcaster. How you doing, man?
Oh, I feel like I've just been insulted, which is basically part of the course in this game, isn't it?
Certainly at the start of an episode, I'll win you over, and that's why you keep
exactly,
coming back.
Exactly, yeah. Plus the kickbacks as well, you know. So anyhow, moving on. How's things? How are you?
I'm very well. It's been, as you know, it's been a busy weekend. It's been a farthest from weekend. You were missed, man. You were, lots of people asked after you. It was a shame you couldn't make it, but that's life. Work comes first. But it was a great weekend. It was busy. We got down on the Friday, myself, Paul from Start Your Engines, soon to be from Start Your Engines. So the three of us went down. Had a great time. Family Fun Day was fun. We got lots of audio and video, which will be coming to Fanta TV and here to Making Tracks. So we had Guy Henry, we had Neil Scanlon, Brian Herring on the evening, which was fantastic fun. Brilliant.
Yeah, no, I was really gutted, and it was fairly last minute that I was called in to work, unfortunately. Seen some photos and stuff. Looks amazing. You know, Mr. Tree always does put on a brilliant little show. So hopefully when the spring rolls around and he does his next show, I will be there. I mean, you can catch up again in person. Most important thing, as you went down to a vintage Star Wars toy fair, did you buy any vintage Star Wars stuff?
No. Dude, I don't know what's wrong with me. I mean, this is like the fourth or fifth show in a row where I've really barely bought anything. I bought some patches. Deflector DC had some cool little patches. Nothing to do with what they do. They just look really nice, so I got them. You know, it's like swaggy bits. You know, Generation Skywalker had some really cool badges and stickers, so I had a couple of those. And the wonderful Grant Criddle, again from Generation Skywalker, gave me a box with some Phantom Menace sort of merchandise stuff, which was completely just a gift. So thank you, Grant. That was really cool of you. The old Richard Mitchell game, along with a bag full of old Star Trek videos, which loads of people give me a funny look, but I was chuffed to bits because I had them years ago and I let them go. So there's a space waiting for them. And that was very unexpected. So actually, I ended up getting given more stuff than I bought, which probably isn't so good for a vintage show that's trying to make a bit of money. But, you know, what can you do? Anything come your way? Or?
Not a huge amount. I've had to kind of slightly take my foot off the pedal just a little bit because, you know, having to pay for Christmas and stuff like that. But I did get a set of trading cards from Topps for the Book of Boba Fett trailer.
Yeah.
They did these kind of short run, maybe I think it was only about 10 cards. They did it for like just for trailer.
Oh,
and also, I mean, they've done parts of some of the other like films when they've been released and stuff.
But right now, we're going to head into the latest news because there's been a lot of news and a lot of stuff going on. We're going to try and catch all of it. Variety are reporting that Amanda Stenberg, that's Amanda with an L, being eyed up for a role in The Acolyte. Now, we've had this kind of thing before when we've seen names and faces come along for projects, somebody for Ahsoka and somebody for Andor and somebody for whatever. Yeah. There's no frame of reference. So there's not an awful lot we can say, but just on the basis of just a visual on the Amanda and what we know from previous roles, any suspicion of what role Amanda might be going for?
I'm just looking at their IMDb page. One notable thing, and possibly might be a clue, is obviously they were in The Hunger Games in 2012. Got a real specific look. They could be a Jedi. It's just, I mean, you know, they're fairly young-ish, so they could be a Padawan or they could be a Sith apprentice. So who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so little to go on. And one of the themes of this week's news, I think, as we get into it, all these things which are being kind of announced or leaked or, you know, how can we say, kind of rumoured by the press, but none of it is getting picked up or getting confirmed by Lucasfilm at the moment.
That's a good observation, really, because, yeah, you're right. Most of what we talk about this week, and it feels like a busy week, but, yeah, it's a lot of hypothesis and supposition, but like you say, not a lot of solid news. The big takeaway for me from this is that work on The Acolyte is clearly ramping up.
Yes.
You know, it feels like 22 is the year when we're going to start hearing more about performers like Amanda and other people's names get thrown in. you kind of hope that there might be some familiar characters get used in The Acolyte, because it's only 80 years before, I think, yeah, it's 80 years before A New Hope, so 50 years before Phantom Menace, but right at the back end of the High Republic era. And of course, we had that trailer for Star Wars Eclipse as well.
Absolutely, yeah, that came out just the other day, and that looks absolutely phenomenal. Just looks stunning. But again, it did take me back to those old Republic trailers where they look so cinematic and so top end. And obviously, you know, the kind of graphic quality that you get when you are playing the old Republic is nowhere near that. There was shots in my arm, just like, is that live action or is that all CG or is that a combination? Just, you literally couldn't tell, but it has an atmosphere about it. And I think, if anything, this is probably the most exciting thing to come out of a High Republic that I think I've seen since they released the first book back, well, almost a year ago now.
It had that European sci-fi feel to it, that Fifth Element feel. Mm. And I think Quantic Dream of French, if I'm correct, I think they're a French-based company, so there's probably a logical connection there. For these two things to come, obviously, Acolyte is High Republic. That's High Republic. We've got, is it the third wave of phase one of High Republic coming fairly early in 22? So they're starting to promote and push that as well. So it's a good time to be a High Republic fan because there's a lot going on. But as far as this Amanda Stenberg news goes, very interesting. Earliest, really, that we've seen, other than Leslie Headland sort of being announced as the writer and the driving force behind it. But yeah, fingers crossed, we start hearing more news from The Acolyte soon.
Hi, this is Guy Henry, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. Enjoy.
So Patty Jenkins was announced as stepping away from Rogue Squadron due to scheduling issues to focus on Cleopatra and Wonder Woman 3. It now appears that she has stepped away from Cleopatra, which has made a lot of people wonder, does this mean she's coming back to Rogue Squadron? Nothing's been said and nothing's been confirmed. And as it stands, Rogue Squadron is on the pause button. What do you make of this? Again, it's another kind of non-news story. It's something related to Star Wars, but not. Do you think there's an opportunity, a potential or a hunger or an avenue for her to come back to Rogue Squadron and get that up and moving again?
Well, I suppose on one hand, because Lucasfilm didn't announce it officially that she had stepped away from Rogue Squadron, this story has come out from Empire and I think we should source from Deadline to say that she's dropped Cleopatra to pick up Rogue Squadron. They don't need to say anything. We don't need to comment because officially nothing's changed. But Warner Brothers, they really rushed to greenlight and get an announcement out for Wonder Woman 3. You know, so this is probably one of their tentpole films for the next year or so. But my understanding was Cleopatra was a passion project for Patty. That was my understanding with Gal Gadot. So the question is if this is true and that Empire say that she's going to be a producer, then obviously she's still got some kind of creative control, but she doesn't need to have a day-to-day involvement as she would do if she was directing. So potentially, yeah, that could mean that she could step back into Rogue Squadron.
It definitely, if she's still involved as a producer on Cleopatra, then she's still going to have a big hand in it. In the same way Spielberg's got a production hand on Indy, you can't imagine he's not going to have some of his sort of creative DNA involved in that project. Just because he's not in the big chair doesn't mean he's not got some creative involvement. So I would imagine, and then you say, clearly this was a passion project. She works well with Gal Gadot because of the Wonder Woman connection. And they're moving on to the third Wonder Woman. Rumours were having it that Rogue Squadron was going to start shooting sort of April time here in the UK. Now that's presumably not happening now. So all talks you would imagine have stopped. It's a big engine to get going again. They've probably shifted gears to another project to think, well, now we've lost X amount of weeks or months. They're still putting visual effects on Spider-Man as we speak.
Exactly.
It's out on Wednesday here in the UK. They're still working on it. A lost week or a lost month is monumental to a major film like this. So I can't imagine that they can get it back on track even now that far out. Sometimes I think they bring in the directors and they want writer directors. And I just sometimes think, no, you just want a director. You want a writer and you want a director.
Exactly. Know? This is, without getting down into the weeds, this is, I suppose you could say, the argument between a viewer tour director, so somebody who, like you said, writes, comes up with a concept and then directs, i.e. George Lucas, shall we say, also like Rian Johnson, as opposed to somebody who is more of a studio director who could actually step in to a franchise and not necessarily impart such a high level of their own individual taste and stuff to maintain a look or a feel for a franchise. And obviously, if you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's basically what every director pretty much is in that franchise, I think. It's just, you know, they're there to get the film finished rather than necessarily some kind of like real kind of creative intent to it per se, you know.
I totally agree though. And don't you think that's a little bit like Lucas was the right creator of Star Wars because he's the guy that began it all, and Kurtz is there as the producer, so they're a complete power duo working on that film. Yeah. You get to Empire and Lucas is now an executive producer and writer, and Kurtz is still the producer making all the nuts and bolts screw together. But George doesn't want to direct Empire, so he brings in Kirshner, who really was just what you described, that working director. He's a creative, he's got ideas, he's got input and such, but he's there to direct. A bit like Ron Howard coming in onto Solo, he's there to direct.
Or Richard Marquand for Jedi.
Totally. Which is a complete flip on the seat on the prequel trilogy, because George was doing it again and such, but it works in certain scenarios, doesn't it?
I think it does. You're right. It does. And I think the difference is, obviously, with George, and especially in that prequel era time, it was the prequels and it was all George and it was all on George's notepad or in his head, and he knew exactly what he wanted. We're now in this different slight scenario whereby Lucasfilm has to basically, to a degree, be subservient to the shareholders of Disney, but profit concerns of that. They have a story group. So then if you're a director and you've got a story, you've kind of got to work in the bounds of what the story group wants you to work between, considering all the other plates that are now suddenly spinning with Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, and Andor and Obi-Wan. And so they want to have this cohesive universe, or galaxy, I should say. But then obviously they're trying to attract or draw directors who want to tell Star Wars, but in a different way, with a different spin, because it's kind of like, you know, it's new and it's fresh and it's something that we haven't necessarily seen before, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But then you kind of think, well, actually, is this what we need right now? Or do we need just a steady pair of hands who can put good Star Wars on and not make it controversial, not make it subversive? I think they probably need a director who's probably not necessarily as big a name, somebody who's more willing to collaborate and work with Lucasfilm rather than against Lucasfilm in respects of, you just want a director who's going to tell good stories in the Star Wars galaxy, full stop.
You just need that tough, seasoned director to steer the ship, because it's a big boat, isn't it?
Big boat, and there's a lot of icebergs out there.
I'm Dennis Lawson, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
So at the recent Wales Comic Con in sunny Telford, myself and Carl Baylis were fortunate enough to walk around and interview loads of Star Wars guests, and amongst that group of wonderful people was Angus McInnes, you'll know him best as Gold Leader from A New Hope, and also from Rogue One. So here's our very illuminating chat with Angus McInnes. So we're here at Wales Comic Con with Angus McInnes.
Thank you.
It's getting busy. It's getting nice and busy.
It's getting noisy, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Mm. How's life with you?
Good. Good. I'm going through the same withdrawal that everybody else is going through after all this, 20 months of inactivity. But we're coming back. Comic Cons are coming back. Life's coming back.
Yeah.
Slowly and surely. And, I'm getting through it. Hey.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. A lot tougher for other people than it is for me. That's for sure.
Yeah. How have you found it? I mean, you've kept yourself busy. I mean, everyone's had to shut the doors and bolt it.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time writing. Actors always live in this sort of fantasy world that they can write screenplays.
Yeah.
It's not true. But I spent months finishing a screenplay that I wanted to write for a long time. And I sent it to a very good friend of mine in the States who is a screenwriter.
Yeah.
And he taught screenwriting for years. And he sent it back with enough notes for me to completely rewrite it. So, yeah, it's sort of a, what do you call those, never-ending stories?
Right.
I guess it's a never-ending project.
Were they useful notes? I mean, when you're writing anything, we always think we're writing Shakespeare, and then somebody else looks at it and goes, there's typos in that.
He says things like, well, that character, the two main characters aren't strong enough, there's not enough friction between them, they're not interesting enough to carry a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I get it. Okay. And then, it kind of unravels you, but then you just have to say, well, that's why you sent it to him.
Yeah.
To ask, and you look at it in hindsight and you go, he's actually right.
Was it interesting for you then that, I mean, none of us are spring chickens, but we're always learning.
You're
on a learning curve for something
new. You can never, ever, ever, ever stop learning. Life is a constant curve of learning. And if you don't get involved in that, people that stop, they're dead.
Yeah.
They are literally dead in the head. And it's like, that's no good. So you have to always be looking and be humble enough to say, I didn't know how to do that. That's really interesting. Oh, cool. I love that. That's what YouTube is good for, by the way. You know, if you don't know how to fix your car, you can go onto YouTube. And,
that's true.
Really, what was my first turn onto that? You know, and I learned how to. Also, one of the things I did, I started baking bread.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I had, you know, I used to have a pizzeria, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to make, like, unbelievable amounts of dough. But that was 20 years ago, and it was, like, 15 kilograms of flour at a time.
Yeah.
This is, like, one kilogram. And so I had to relearn all the techniques of making dough.
Yeah.
And how to make a starter, how to make this, how to make... And so I just watched on YouTube, and I started experimenting, and hey, presto, I make a loaf of bread a week, and it's fabulous. And every time I was saying this to somebody else, every single time I take it out of the oven and I put it down to cool, I look at it and I go, man, that's unbelievable. That's actually, that's magic. And it's like every single time.
How
it
cool.
never changes. It's like, I just look at it and I just think, you know, just mixing all that stuff together and you get this. And it's actually really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not, I'm not just blowing my own
mind. No,
it's true. And so I just look at it and go, but it's like, learning, that's part of the learning thing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to learn how to do that again, how to relearn something, and I used my time for that. I've got somebody I know, and he was locked down in a house in France, and so he rebuilt it.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. He did, and he did an unbelievably good job. The house was basically a shell as it was, but so he suddenly went, well, I'm faced with an unending, I don't know how long this is going to last.
No.
So he said the only things that were open were supermarkets and building supply places. So he just started rebuilding it.
Well,
yeah. And
wow.
People just go and do, you know, they get. And I also think that, you know, a lot of people are moaning about how many people are out of work.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people during the lockdown just had an examination of their life and said, you know, I don't want to do that job anymore because it was crap. I want to do something more interesting. And whether they can or not is another question, but the fact of the matter is I think that's one of the reasons why there's a zillion people out there in the unemployment market. It's like employers can't find enough people because the people are saying, I don't know if I want to do this.
Yeah.
Quite
apart from wanting to try your bread, now we're back out at events and conventions. How does this feel? Because this is a nicely filling up, nice and busy, great atmosphere. Are you enjoying it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, since we got started, this is my second one in like 2 weeks, and like, it was the same as before. It was just people with smiles on their face the whole time. And here, everybody's buoyant. Everybody's having a good time. I'm surprised how few people are wearing masks. That surprises me. When I was in Brussels, there was 80% of the people wearing masks. Here, 20% are wearing. So it's, you know, it's just, that's a bit odd. But, and in Scotland, everybody wears masks on public transport. In any shop, if you go to buy a loaf of bread, you got to put a mask on.
It's bread again.
But here, apparently not. I saw people go into shops, and it's just, I get it. That's fine. I'm not criticizing. I'm just amazed. So, hey. But hey, we got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So what's lined up for you? What's coming up next? I mean, Christmas is coming out. It's like a freight train. But
Christmas is coming, and I have no plans. I've got, just things will happen in the new year. These are still going to go on, and we'll have some fun. And who knows, maybe a movie will come along. I'm getting older and weirder, but I mean, it's the way it goes. But maybe we'll work. I don't know. I'd like to work. So,
brilliant.
You know, I haven't been that enthusiastic about working for the last few years, but...
It sounds like this writing project is...
Yeah. Well, we'll do what we can.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time, as always.
Nice talking to you.
All the best.
Okay.
Haslab fans, Hasbro Pulse fans, most importantly, Black Series fans might be happy, but probably are sad that the Haslab Rancor, didn't make its minimum target of 9,000 backers. It fell 612 shy of the target. It got 8,388 backers, but it didn't make it in time. Good grief. I mean, this has been everywhere. Everyone's been talking about it.
Yeah.
Everyone's got an opinion. Crazy, isn't it?
It's a little bit crazy. And I think in some respects, whilst I found it slightly funny sitting on the fence on this one, I found it bizarre that you had Black Series collectors basically were like, no, we're not supporting this. And in fact, we don't want this to make it. And we want to teach Hasbro a lesson because of the fact it kind of shows them that they can't just put anything out and expect us to back it, which I think in some respects is good. Then on the other hand, you had collectors who like, we've got to get it to 9,000. We were both watching the backers kind of go up and go down throughout the day. and, you know, said it was probably going to have a bit of a rally, and I was actually surprised. I thought it would get kind of close, but I didn't think it'd get quite that close. But at the same time, I feel slightly glad that it didn't, because I just feel like the product itself didn't really to be a HasLab kind of offering, if I'm honest.
So many thoughts on this. The big one that jumps out to me is that HasLab as a concept should have just one thing running at once.
Yeah.
And so you've got a fan base where there's, I mean, Star Wars is for all ages and everybody, but people who are going high end, like HasLab is high end. If you're a Star Wars fan, you're really going to have your head turned by the proton pack from Ghostbusters, especially with Afterlife doing so well. So when they put out a proton pack at the same time, which I think as we speak is at about 21,000 backers.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, it's bonkers, isn't it? It's like
hit all its tiers, hit all its stretch goals, hasn't it?
Completely. But, you know, it's the same kind of price as a Rancor, but yeah, it feels so much more substantial.
I quite like the look of the Rancor. And I think it would have looked much better in person, in natural light, in not in studio lights. And I think there's a lot of little things you could look at. And they really did sort of give the detail 950 deco points, you know, all the articulations. And it was a big beast, you know, it was big size. I personally think with Black Series, you don't need ships for Black Series. You need scenes for Black Series. I think a lot of people, like collectors that we know, Black Series collectors, will buy one and pop one out of the box. And they set it up in a scene, whereas with 3¾, with vintage, you can get a vintage Falcon. That's the whole point of the guy going, well, between my middle finger and my thumb is the size of the figure, 3¾ inches kind of thing, because that's a scale that's workable. You can make a TIE fighter and an X-Wing and a Falcon or whatever. But with Black Series, it's not feasible to even consider a Black Series Millennium Falcon. But a Black Series Millennium Falcon cockpit or a Black Series Millennium Falcon hold is feasible. So I think with Black Series, you can do scenes because it speaks more to dioramas than it does vehicles. I don't know. Hasbro are obviously doing an autopsy on this. They've got to have walked away and thought, that's not the route to take, is it?
It's also timing. You know, bearing in mind that we're 2 weeks away from Christmas, really, 3 weeks away from Christmas, and, you know, you want me to plonk down like £330 for something that I'm not going to get for at least another year, bearing in mind that we still haven't received our Razor Crest, which I know they've been fairly upfront and said it's delayed till next year. So we know that they're coming. But for me, I was just like, well, hang on a sec. So I brought the Razor Crest, which I haven't got yet, and it's that much closer to Christmas. I'm thinking, I don't know if I could even like feasibly stretch to it without feeling a little bit guilty about doing it. And yeah, I think all those stretch goal items, if they were actually just bundled in at the 9,000 tier, I think that would make it a bit more appealing. Everybody was calling out for Ula, and you kind of wonder, you know, it's okay, it's great getting these different variant carded figures like a Gamorrean Guard or a Luke Skywalker, but we've had loads of Gamma Guards and we've had loads of Luke Skywalkers. You know, give the collectors and the fans who have been calling out for a certain character, give them that character. It just seems a bit slightly short-sighted. Hopefully, like you said, but the guys are Hasbro, and we have absolutely nothing against Hasbro because we're both diehard collectors, both me and yourself. So it's not like we want another company to take over and stuff. You know, hopefully they can go away, maybe have a rethink and see what they can do. Maybe it is, like you said, it's a diorama type thing for Black Series and it's vehicles for 3¾. I mean, I suppose it's got to be something that they haven't been able to do at either scale, really, that's going to get the fans' attention. So I don't know if you've got any thoughts on what you could possibly do next, besides Millennium Falcon for the Black Series.
There is a delineation between the two, otherwise why have two scales?
Yeah, correct.
I think maybe HasLab for Black Series, you just can't think of it in the same way as HasLab for Vintage. You're not going to get a HasLab Black Series Razor Crest, are you? You know, so maybe the diorama thing is a consideration, or maybe, and they do seem reticent to go down this avenue, but if enough people wanted it, then they would certainly consider it, because I do think they do listen. Well, I know that they listen, and there's certain considerations they have to account for. You mentioned the Ula thing. Let's say, and this is hypothesis, let's say Disney go, you know, we really don't want a semi-naked, green, basically very sexy woman coming out as a toy in the Disney era that little kids can legitimately pick up age 3 and over, because that's kind of not what we want to sell. But I would imagine Disney don't want to overtly say that, and certainly Hasbro wouldn't want to speak on Disney's behalf. So I think they're caught between two stools there, so they kind of just have to evade. I think the Malakili thing, and I think it's all perception, they appear to bow to public pressure as opposed to public suggestion, if that makes any sense. You know, the fans wanted it and they were saying it, and it ended up feeling like they were backtracking and going, okay, we're going to give you what you want. And I think you're right. If that had been part of the 9,000 goal, you get the Rancor and Malakili, that would have made a difference. I think that might have got them over 9,000. tooling is always a problem. It's so cripplingly expensive. I think maybe for Black Series, you know, your main line, you're going to get troopers. You're going to always get your main characters. There's always going to be Mando on the shelves, for example, because people buy it, it's selling, and people want it. That's tooled up and done, and it's tweaks and so on and so forth. But those trickier figures, you can't compare the tooling on a 3¾, you know, a vintage era figure from the 1980s to what they're doing now.
No.
The level of detail, the articulation, just light years apart. They're completely different toys. The only thing that's the same is the 3¾, really, in the packaging. So it's a much different world than it was then. But I think maybe there's things to consider there for them to make different types of offerings. I think maybe this is the lesson that doing creatures in 3¾ works. Doing creatures in Black Series doesn't. And that container set we talked about the other week that came out, you bought the original one back in the day and they've just redone it as a Black Series. Look fantastic. That was so cool. You can set it up. It's a little moment from the film.
Yeah, exactly. Hasbro's got to try and appeal to the widest audience that they can do. And I suppose you look at something like the Proton Pack that they've just done. I don't think there's a company out there who's doing any form of official licensed Ghostbuster props. Whereas I think, for instance, with Hasbro, they already do the Black Series, which is basically, we used to be kind of like the Force Effects collectibles, those kind of props already. Then you've got other manufacturers, you know, that does it Duonovo, who's based now doing helmets and stuff like that. Maybe they need to rethink about actually, well, could we fit into that market and maybe do a HasLab, I don't know, like Boba Fett's jetpack or something like that. But I suppose at the end of the day, we also forget that, you know, with the HasLab, it's like a Kickstarter. If it doesn't get the backers, it doesn't get made. And if the backers aren't there, then it probably says more to Hasbro that, you know, there's not the market for a certain type of product. But actually, if it just whimpers past, then we think, well, actually, you know, we scrape through with a Rancor, let's do a Wumpa or something like that next, a Black Series scale, which again might not get anywhere close to meeting it. So hopefully, you know, we'll see something new and something exciting come from Hasbro in the new year.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
A Bespin Leia in a Bespin gown, Leia Organa figure, sold at the latest Vectis auction for £9,000. Crazy money. It's an insanely gorgeous figure. It really is. It's a carded Palator version of the Leia Organa figure. Toys. I mean, we've just been talking about HasLab and the Rancor and how that didn't get across the line. And funny enough, 9,000 was the target for that. And here we are talking about a Leia figure that's selling for £9,000. It's crazy money, but when you look at it, it really is something special, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's not many in existence anymore, is there, of this design? I think there's only 4 or 5 floating around. So obviously, this one's now off the market, which means any more that go on sale, if you've got one in your loft or something, you might want to consider taking it out and putting it in a style case or something like that to look after it if you're not going to sell it. I posted up on the FanthaTrack social media feed when you posted this, or Matt posted the story originally. I said, that's so inconsiderate, because a person who brought this could have basically backed 27 Rancors for the HasLab for the same price. So, you know, would have taken it about a little bit closer to meeting their stretch goals. This one in particular, this, at least a photo that Vector's put up, it's a pretty clean figure, isn't it? I mean, the bubble's nice and clear, the card looks to be pretty crisp. I think it's all down to the card back, isn't it? It's the what's on the back of the card that is what makes it rare. The fact that it's a different kind of like layout and stuff like that.
You mentioned the price. It's £9,375 it went for, an unnamed collector based in Wales. Just the cost of toys now, especially vintage. This came up in conversation at Fire This One, funny enough, that you think, why haven't I got that DeLorean? I could go back and buy that toy and open it and put it in my loft. But if nobody had ever opened their Star Wars toys, we wouldn't be at places I'll find this from. And you and me wouldn't be talking about Star Wars right now, 40 odd years after it came out. So they needed to be played with. But nevertheless, it is lovely, especially a Palatoy one, especially for us Brits to see a Palatoy pristine layer like this. Just fantastic.
Yeah. See, I mean, I probably go against the grain a little bit, because I've got some Palatoy and some Kenner stuff. And for me personally, as a collector, I would always gravitate towards the Kenner stuff. Because to me, it's Kenner, but it's a name that I recognise with Star Wars. Because I wasn't old enough to play with the Palatoy figures when they came out, so I would never have seen these in the shops. I don't have an actual nostalgic connection to Palatoy. It's just one of those things. It's just like, I always, if you gave me the choice between the two, and if you didn't tell me the value, and they looked exactly the same condition and quality, I would probably pick up a Kenner one.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
Sorry, man, if I've broken your heart.
Can we go to a commercial?
But this is why I didn't get a Fathers From, because I think I would have been lynched.
I'm Brian Herring, BB8 Puppeteer, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. That'll learn you.
Listeners to Making Tracks last week will have heard Jeremy Beckett coming on and talking a little bit about Lego, which was awesome, but we thought it'd be way more fun to talk face-to-face. So, all the way from the other side of the world, Jeremy, you're here to talk Lego and what's coming in 2022. How's things anyway? How are you?
Oh, fantastic over here in Australia. Different country, different world.
But you're enjoying the palm trees as opposed to us enjoying the rain. So you've definitely got the right side of the buttered bread there,
oh,
I think.
Oh, hang on. I'm in subtropics. We get a lot of rain. We'll get what you get in a month, we'll get in a day.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, okay. What goes around comes around. The world is round and all that.
But in our world, it's actually square-shaped with little bobbly bits on the top. It's Lego-shaped, isn't it? So what can we be expecting for Lego collectors and fans of all things brick? What's 2022 going to bring us?
Well, we've just been through a couple of weeks of reveals from Lego, giving us a heads up on the bulk of the winter wave, which comes out in January on most toy store shelves. North America should get it just before Christmas. Tying in with the UCS AT-AT that's just come out, we've got a Snowtrooper Battle Pack and a Hoth AT-ST. Also new for 2022 are accessory packs. Now, these have been around for a while with a couple of different LEGO IPs, and they're adding two to their catalogue. Now, I think this is something to do with the new license agreement. 2022 was the renewal year, and there's always been the sticking point around individual minifigs for the Star Wars line. It was conflict between Hasbro and LEGO decades ago, even. And yeah. I think these new accessory packs is a workaround. You'll see a couple of minifigs and some small weaponry-type builds, very similar to the advent calendars. The original workaround was magnets. And then we went to battle packs, but the price on the battle packs has been going up and up. And when people want to buy two or three minifigures, they don't want to spend double decimals. We've got a Hoth one coming up and the Clone Wars one, and there's a little bit of a Clone Wars slant coming to the rest of the year because, of course, it's the Attack of the Clones 20th anniversary. Also commemorating a milestone is the 150th Brickhead, which is going to be Ahsoka Tano. And we also got a new microfighter in the form of the Razor Crest, and there's a lot of raised eyebrows over that. It's not been well received. It's always the way the collectors, the fans, always kind of roll their eyes when they see the pictures, but as soon as they get the bricks in their hands, it all changes. But for the rest of the year, now that's all pretty much kept behind the curtains at the moment. We didn't get a Toy Fair last year. New York Toy Fair was cancelled because of COVID. This year it's looking to go ahead, and LEGO have confirmed is attending. So we might start seeing things in February, maybe a couple of days before. But Promobooks in Germany have seemed to have a good line on a lot of upcoming sets. No pictures have been revealed yet. Vague descriptions, part counts and euro prices have been mentioned. Because we haven't seen much in the way of the Book of Boba Fett revealed to us yet, apart from the couple of trailers, LEGO are keeping a lid on the two rumoured Book of Boba Fett sets. One's supposed to be a palace, and there's also the rumor of a brick-built Rancor monster. Now, no one quite knows how that ties in yet. That kind of wraps up the winter wave, and then we move into the spring wave. Now, that normally starts coming out in April, but it looks like, according to Promo Bricks, we'll start seeing some March reveals. So we're looking at an extended spring wave, March, April, and then going into May the 4th. Typically, in the past couple of years, that's been more adult collector concentrated. Yeah. We've had the helmets coming out in the past couple of years and the probe droid, and then moving into the big ticket item of May the 4th. So what we're looking at, according to Promo Bricks, is two more helmets, which is going to be Luke Skywalker's X-Wing helmet and a Mandalorian helmet, which I imagine is going to be quite similar to the Boba Fett helmet, just in a different color palette. There was a rumor of an AT-AT driver helmet, but that seems to have dropped off all the gossip lists at the moment. So again, more of the Mandalorian. Apparently, we're getting a Dark Trooper battle pack, and that is supposed to reflect the scene at the end of the second series where the Moff Gideon's Dark Troopers and Luke Skywalker faced off. They're talking about 166 pieces, four minifigures, so you can deduct that part count. So there's obviously a little scene with it as well.
Okay.
A doorway, a corridor, anyone's guess.
And a little mini R2, hopefully.
Well, yeah, there haven't been enough of those yet, have there?
No.
Sticking with Hoth, but on a very smaller scale, we are expecting to see a mini scale AT-ST coming out, polybagged, probably with Target, because past 3, 4, maybe 5 years, they seem to have had a couple of polybags around that same time of year in the novelty kind of impulse buy area by the cash register. Because adults have got to save their money, because the next jump forward is May. The most popular LEGO Star Wars set, the Landspeeder, which I think there's been one every 2 years, is going to be getting the UCS treatment. I'm picturing someone buying two and building them into, like, slippers.
Cushing style, but more painful.
Yeah, that's right. He wishes.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine if it was in the right scale to the buildable figures, the defunct buildable figures line? We had the speeder bike.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be amazing if you could slip a Luke Skywalker in?
Slipper Luke Skywalker in. I got what you did there.
No. That's the back of my brain working. Occasionally my brain works faster than my mouth.
Take that one.
I will. Now, of course, with the big ticket sets in May, we get a gift with purchase. There's been no mention, no rumours yet about GWP, so we're all kind of looking out for that. Then we move into what looks like a series of three adult sets.
Right.
Rumours are talking about a Death Star trench run. From the description that Promobricks has put up, it kind of looks like the mini battle vignettes that have been coming out as gift with purchases over the last couple of years. We've got what, Death Star, Battle of Endor, the Tatooine Homestead, Battle of Hoth. I think that could fit the bill, but I don't think they're going to position it as a gift with purchase. So we're also looking at a training on Dagobah set, which is, again, adult-oriented, kind of like the meditation chamber we saw last year. Oh, no, yeah. This year. We're still not in 2022.
I know.
To 2022. What it's looking like is it's going to be Yoda's hut, but instead of the kind of domey hut that we've seen in the past two sets,
yeah,
it's going to have the tree, it's going to have the roots around it. You're going to see some kind of flora form to the domicile, and then to the side is going to be a swampy training area. The next set we're going to talk about, they've all got little tiled bricks on the side with phrases, with quotes from those scenes. So
right,
it's not really play, more display, and it's looking like adults are going to be getting into those.
Interesting stuff.
Did look like there was a bit of a trend going with, we had a Death Star trench from Star Wars A New Hope. We had the training on Dagobah from The Empire Strikes Back, kind of expecting it to be Return of the Jedi. They're talking about a Death Star trash compactor with a couple of minifigures. All these sets are going to have minifigures, according to rumor. It's going to have this little printed tile with the quote on it as well.
From what you've laid out there, it really does cover the gamut, doesn't it? It's catching every element of the LEGO collecting family. There's something for everybody there.
Yeah, kids, adults, you know, the adults who really, really want to build and get into it with their slippers on, feet up, slippers on.
Can't forget the slippers. So what else is happening in your LEGO world?
Well, I've spent a week building the new AT-AT. Now, in that week, I only dedicated 13 hours and 45 minutes to the actual build. So I was pretty pleased with that result. I've had to reassemble small sections of it a couple of times because it's not easy to move and there's half a dozen pieces that refuse to grip. So I got that built. I managed to get it photographed without knocking it over. So that'll be coming up in a review on Holobrook Archive, hopefully in the next couple of days. One thing about this set, the instruction books were broken up over four boxes rather than that big tome. And the last few UCS sets have had that really nice intro chapter at the start, talking about how the original model was conceived at ILM with, you know, Lucas involved, how the genesis of it through the model builders. And I missed that. So I've written that into my review of the AT-AT as well. Or AT-AT.
It's AT-AT.
It's always debatable how to pronounce it.
Oh, no.
I say AT-AT, but you know, the only time it was ever verbalized in the Star Wars movie, it was called an Imperial Walker.
True, but yeah. AT-AT, it looks right. It's like Executor, Executor. No, it's Executor. Executor's there to kick your ass. Executor's there to hand you a letter saying, I'm coming back to kick your ass.
Everyone says AT-ST, they don't say AT-ST. If you want to keep up with all the LEGO Star Wars news, Holobrook Archive is the place to go. The Holobrook Archive, www.holobrickarchive.com.
Awesome. I feel like I know so much more about LEGO than I did when we started talking.
Cheers.
Brilliant. Man. All the best, mate.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
So a couple of weeks ago, Disney put out a video hyping and letting people know a little bit more about Galactic Star Cruiser. And within a few days of that, they did the unprecedented move of taking that video down, which of course, as any video being taken down or article being pulled, gets people talking. That video appeared on the internet. A lot of people have seen it, but somewhat out of their control. In print, Entertainment Weekly have published some images from Galactic Star Cruiser. We've met the captain, Captain Keevan. We've seen an image of her in the cockpit of the Halcyon. It's got a lot of folks talking. It's, wow, wow. Okay, well, I'm going to throw this bone over to you, Mark. What did you make of what we've seen so far?
Do you know what? It could just be one of those things. You know how some stuff just doesn't always seem to look as good on film as it does in real life? There's just something about the images that I've seen. It looks great. It's not bad. It's like it looks crap or looks cheap or anything like that. I just wonder if this is Star Wars or if this is maybe the Disney Star Wars that they want. It kind of felt and it kind of looked to me a little bit more like generic sci-fi. And I suppose it's really difficult because everybody knows and we all talk about the lived-in universe of Star Wars.
Yeah.
But you do wonder, not everything surely is going to be lived in and going to be tatty. You look at like the Sundered Heart, for instance, from Revenge of the Sith. That was pristine and gleaming.
Yeah.
So you kind of think, well, yes, maybe this is in a similar vein. But, you know, keep in mind the price tag. If you're spending 2,000 credits for two nights to go on a cruise somewhere, you want it to be nice and clean and that. You don't want it looking like cargo hold of the Millennium Falcon. But that's a question. And I think this is what's, you know, a lot of questions are now being asked because of this is actually, do we not want to go and spend two nights in the Millennium Falcon and go to the Mos Eisley Cantina or, you know, visit the Death Star or what have you, rather than this kind of unique and original kind of experience that Disney's now offering?
Probably, and this is just my thoughts, I think probably people do or would rather go to a Millennium Falcon. But that being said, we've had Star Tours for a long time, and now this kind of feels like Star Tours made real. So when you look at it, it's like, I get the concepts, I get the thought processes behind it. I don't think what we've seen is the finished product. My gut tells me that this was filmed a while ago. I've got to say, the video did not impress me. I love the kid from the Goldbergs. I think he's ace and he's brilliant in that. But it was a really weird decision to have him being the kid from the Goldbergs. It didn't really work for me. It was a bit of an odd decision in that sense. What did you think?
To be fair, I work for a massive corporation and I think we suffer from this as well. You know, not every kind of executive should be put in front of the camera like Steve Jobs used to, you know?
Sure.
And I just wonder if maybe there was a better way of doing it. But the thing is, the whole thing about the Galactic Star Cruiser is that, you know, you'd imagine you go in there and you're going to be immersed in this atmosphere. And I think you can't necessarily capture that on camera, you know, when there's only two people walking around the Star Cruiser and, you know, the canteen is filled with a few extras and that's it. And of course, I think the other thing we've got to remember, because of the price tag, I think there's a lot of expectations by a lot of people. And there's also, I think, quite a large fan base who have now been completely priced out for this. So therefore, they're kind of anything that they can spot and nitpick at and try to bring it down a couple of like $100 or $500, what have you, they will do. I think there's a little bit of ill will to this just because obviously the price tags started to price people out a little bit. This is the first of its kind. And I think that whatever this version one is, I think it's only going to get better and it's only going to develop over time. Once you start to actually have that interaction with Galaxy's Edge, you know, you've got a destination where you can go to.
Yeah.
Then I think the whole experience should tie together. I mean, I'd love to go out and just from a fan perspective, I really want to go. But I'm also completely curious to see how they pull this off from a kind of more behind the scenes kind of logistical kind of standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. I think because it ties in so closely with Galaxy's Edge, you've got to feel like you're traveling too.
Exactly.
And when you walk out, I've not really heard many negatives about Galaxy's Edge, only that people wish it was bigger and that there was more of it. And I think that will come.
And that is coming, isn't it? Yeah.
It is,
I think they're developing like more land. But I'm still surprised they haven't actually decided to rotate, you know, the different time eras a little bit. So, you know, a few days you get some Stormtroopers and the next couple of days you get First Order. So, like, it's different experiences for the guests who are there and stuff like that, you know.
What you just said about Galaxy's Edge, slightly off topic, but Galaxy's Edge makes great sense. Change the radar dish on the Falcon. One day it's First Order. Next week it's Stormtroopers. Most people go for a fortnight. you catch a bit of everything. And I don't think it would hurt it. I think that's quite an easy fix and a nice idea. Actually, I've not heard anyone verbalise it like that. So I think that would work. With this, they're trying to work the housing into storylines like they did with Galaxy's Edge, like they have with High Republic. That all works. That's fine. I think Captain Kaven here, she looks to me like a Pantoran, like Lucas's character.
Exactly.
The Sith. Yep. So I think that's a little subtle little nod that people maybe haven't quite picked up on. Could be wrong. Might just be the same shade of blue, but that's how it speaks to me. Yeah, it looks a bit sterile. I don't think we've seen the finished product because I'm not 100% sure they've finished building it yet. And they don't want to give stuff away because it is a premium experience, isn't it? They don't want to give too much away. And it sells itself. I mean, the first, I think it sold out till July. Or it was. I do know now there are some gaps when some people have backed away. They've been put off by this, which I think is where the controversy, I'm waggling my fingers in the air, the controversy may have come from because this has turned a few people off. But until you're in it, until those first people come back, you know, until they come out and go, my God, you've got to do this. This is incredible. Forget that video. This is just something else. Once that news starts coming back, it'll be booked up till the next century.
It's going to hinge on word of mouth, I think.
It didn't need any of this, did it?
No,
it didn't need this
really.
Hyping.
No, I mean, they did a real kind of short teaser like a few weeks before, didn't they? Was it, I think, probably around Disney Plus Day, and you saw kind of like the lightsaber being ignited and stuff like
that's
that.
Right.
And stills of like the rooms, that makes sense because people need to know and get an idea of where they're going to be staying to a degree. But the more that stays behind the curtain, the best it is. And ironically, we complain for so much about like the mystery box and like JJ's mystery box around Star Wars and stuff. This is the one time where I think probably the mystery box is perfect and it keeps everybody guessing. And then it's not until they gone and hopefully come out and go, oh my God, actually this was even better than I imagined, then you know that's when suddenly your bookings will start to kind of like, you know, skyrocket and you won't need to worry about if it's going to make its money back or not.
Yeah, true. My gut tells me they should have left it, and like you just said, word of mouth will sell this sucker forever because they've clearly spent a lot of money on it, loads of R&D. Disney Imagineers don't often get it wrong. You got Lucasfilm product behind it, it should fly. Feels like a slight marketing misstep, doesn't it, this?
Yeah, best way of putting it. Alrighty, well, send in your questions, your comments, your fan theories, or your criticisms, and they're always welcome. So, Mark, can you tell the good listeners how they can get in touch?
I certainly can. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. We do have a couple in the bag, but we've had so much news today and so many interviews to get through, we're going to save them and bank them, but we will try and get to some over the next week or two. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, and Brian for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK time, for Good Morning Tatooine. It's live, it's with Brian Cameron and a guest. It might be you, it might be me, could be somebody else, who knows? It's 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. And that's me done for this episode.
Awesome, thank you very much for that, my friend.
My pleasure.
Okay, well, in that case, until next week, take care, stay safe, and thank you very much for listening. Big shout out to Leslie. Hi, Leslie, if you're still listening. May the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.